there's a greater agenda. And if they want a CBDC, they will have a CBDC. Inflation is astronomical. They're still printing money. They're doing it very quietly. It's titled meme coins. You're not tricking anyone. You know, right. You're not convincing anyone that like, this is the next Bitcoin. It says what it is on the tin. I don't read comments. If you're making money and they're not,
oh, yeah.
Then they're really mad. They know what your triggers are.
What do you find different about this bull market?
The launch team wishes you good luck and Godspeed.
Space Monkeys blasting off with Leah Heilpern. She's a crypto author, speaker, and content creator. Leah, welcome to Space Monkeys.
Jay, great to be here. Thanks so much for having me. And you nailed my name, by the way.
Did
some
I?
People, yeah, you absolutely killed it.
What do you
it.
Get? What do you get?
I get like Layla, or I get like Heilpern. It's the Heil.
Oh, yeah,
you,
yeah.
You nailed it.
Where's that from?
It sounds German, but it's not. We're just
yeah.
English. That's
okay.
It. Yeah,
just English.
Great to be here.
It's so funny. When I first joined the crypto scene about this time in the halving cycle last year, you were one of the first faces that YouTube pushed to me.
No.
Right? When I was like trying to figure out what everything that was going on, I saw your channel. So it's really exciting to be here in front of you today.
Yeah, it's crazy meeting people in real life. I think that's one of the beauty of doing what we do and creating content, because it's one thing being in crypto, but when you actually create the content, you get to move around,
yeah.
Meet people, go to conferences.
That's right.
So yeah, it's amazing. It's great to see you.
So this is your third cycle, right? That you've been
It's actually my second. Well, can I say 2.5?
Yeah, you can.
Can
yeah.
I? Because I came in the bear market of 2017.
Interesting.
So I came in as soon as Bitcoin crashed.
Oh, wow.
And I entered at $3,000.
Good for you.
Well, not saying I necessarily bought at 3K.
Okay,
I'm just saying.
Okay, but you arrived on the scene?
I arrived on the scene when Bitcoin was at 3K.
Cool, nice.
In 2017. So yeah, I saw it climb from 3K to 5K. I remember we had that rally up to 15. Everyone was like, is the bull back? No, it's yeah. not. You know, so I feel like I've really, you know, experienced a lot, seen a lot. I can see a lot of the similarities between the previous bear market and this bear market.
Yeah.
Previous bull market and this bull market. Mm. So yeah.
What do you find different about this bull market?
Well, I mean, there's a lot that's similar, but the biggest difference is this is the Bitcoin ETF. That's the biggest difference, because what it's done is it's brought everything much sooner. Never before have we hit all-time highs before a halving.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
So it's the first time we've ever done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are 6 months ahead of where we should be.
Mm.
It's put us in this really weird, awkward place, because nobody really knows whether to buy, to sell. We always seem to have that crash before the halving. Hasn't really happened yet. The halving's only like a couple weeks away.
Yeah.
That's the main difference.
Mm.
And the thing is, are we going to see that 50% crash that we usually see around the halving time?
Hmm.
Not necessarily, because now BlackRock is in, all these major institutions are in. I'm sure they don't really want their clients' money to, you know, crash 50%. So it's very, very different now.
I wonder if the folks that we saw at the last cycle, I wonder if they're even in yet, or if this is just all the institutional money kind of bringing us up, just scooping up that Bitcoin right now.
That's exactly what I think.
Yeah.
Because I know this sounds ridiculous, but you really understand the crypto market and where we're at by looking at sentiment online, by looking at Twitter sentiment.
Yeah.
And it's not that
it's
bullish
not hype.
Right now.
No, it's no, not. No.
There's no hype. It's not bullish.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about Bitcoin. We're all just talking about meme coins, which
yeah.
is also a sign of a local top, right?
Right.
So to me, what's happening is the reason we're at all-time highs is because of all that institutional money coming in right now.
Yeah.
And retail has not entered, which is even more bullish, because if we can hit all-time highs just based off of institutional money before the halving,
yeah.
wait till retail FOMO's in. Bitcoin's going to go crazy.
Yeah, I'm very excited about the next couple of years. What were you doing before you heard about Bitcoin?
So I was working as a journalist.
Hmm.
So I've always been really political, very passionate. I've always wanted to talk about things that matter.
Sure.
And I didn't really know what that looked like. All I could see, because I'd never heard of Bitcoin, I didn't really understand the financial system. The things that mattered was, you know, voting, politics, elections,
okay.
news. So that's what I was really focused on. And I always wanted to be on screen talking.
Okay.
And I was working as a journalist in London, and I was so cheeky. I said to my boss at the time, I was like, hey, listen, you know, I'm going to be on screen one day.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be really great if you could, you know, be part of my journey and help me get there. And he just wouldn't give me the opportunity, basically, because I was only 21.
Okay.
You know, and there's a hierarchy.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to wait your turn.
Mm.
And, you know, I was just looking for jobs searching around, I found a job in Malta to be an on-screen journalist for cryptocurrencies. And actually at the time, Malta was such a crypto and blockchain hub. Don't really believe it is anymore, but it was really innovating in regulations and things like that for crypto, creating a framework, which not a lot of countries had. This was even before Dubai was creating that regulatory framework.
Yeah.
So I moved to Malta, learned about crypto, wasn't very convinced, left. Then decided to go back to traditional journalism with that on-screen experience behind me.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I started working for China's global TV network. And that was in Paris. So I lived in Paris. Okay. Wait for it. Lived in Paris.
Yeah, yeah.
Was providing America the European perspective on what is going on in Europe for China.
Who paid the bills? China?
Yes.
Okay.
So... yeah,
what?
China. Yeah, I know. It's kinda, okay. So CGTN is the channel.
Yeah.
They air across the United States.
Interesting. Yeah.
I don't even know if they air within China. Probably not.
Oh, I see.
Right?
I see. Okay.
Probably not. Hmm. So it was China's perspective on what's going on in Europe for America.
Oh, what did that look like? What was that perspective?
Yeah.
Was it slanty?
Completely.
Okay.
So,
really.
So you know the phone Huobi? They're Chinese, right? Not Huobi.
Oh, yeah.
That's the crypto exchange. What's the
Huawei?
Thank
yeah.
you. So Huawei were banned. I think Huawei's still banned in America. I could be wrong, but Huawei's banned in America, and they weren't quite banned in Europe at the time. But Europe were talking about banning it. So I was covering a Huawei event in Paris, and all the Chinese were around us.
Yeah.
And as I was interviewing the founder, the CEO, or whoever he was at the time, eyes were on me, making sure that I was saying the correct thing, asking the correct questions. And actually, I was told by my boss that this needs to be a fluff piece.
Yeah.
So I can't ask, why were you banned in America? Are you afraid that you could be banned here in Europe? What are you doing to make sure that you don't get banned in the future?
Wow.
Are the claims against you true? No, no, no. It was more just like, oh, so like you're rolling out 5G. Isn't that exciting? So it was actually, the narrative was very skewed.
How did that make you feel? Kind of being
awkward.
Shackled like that? Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, I was working more directly with Americans and you know, journalists hold themselves to this extremely high moral standard, which is, you know, we are the gatekeepers of truth. You know, we mediate between the government and the people. We are the truth speakers.
Right.
And Americans are particularly like that.
Yeah.
And being then told by those same people that, oh yeah, this is just going to be a fluff piece, was really mind blowing. You know, it kind of showed me that actually money speaks. You know, who's paying their bills? China.
Yeah.
So when China's paying the bills, the ethics of our journalism declines.
What do you think about the ethics of journalism right now?
I'm over it.
And you are?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things I love about crypto. And that's why I love the transition that I made into crypto.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to deal with mainstream media and traditional journalism and all the BS behind that.
Hmm.
Because there's narratives, as I just described, money talks. They all have their own agenda. You know, when I was working... I used to work for London Live, which was like a local London TV channel.
Mm.
And I used to put the TV packages together and I was in control of the narrative.
Ooh.
And let me tell you, there was an Israel-Palestine protest going on in London.
Mm.
And I got to choose which pictures go up. I get to choose to show which side is violent, which side can be the victim. And I really felt like I had a power to manipulate the narrative.
It's a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you fell back into crypto after this?
Yeah.
How?
Oh, it's kind of crazy. I was covering a story in Paris about the migrant crisis.
Oh, yeah.
And I told this story yesterday, actually.
Okay.
And I had the tents behind me, the homeless behind me, the drugs behind me.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm there with the mic and I'm like, I'm here in North Paris. And my boss actually said to me, Leia, you're doing the story with a little bit of a smile. Don't do that.
Ooh.
And it was at that point that I realized I'm not suited for this.
Oh, yeah.
You
right.
know, because I'm too excited and I want to talk about positive things and
sure.
innovation
yeah,
and how
yeah.
we're changing the world and making a difference. I don't want to really, you know, talk about the homeless and the wars.
No.
And it's not my personality.
Sure.
And so actually somebody who'd been following my work previously when I was doing crypto reached out to me and said, Leia, why don't you come make videos for us? And I was like, okay.
As a presenter?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and journalists, you know, I'd source my own guests and ask my own questions and do my own research.
Incredible.
And write my own scripts.
Yeah.
And from that moment onwards, it just snowballed. And you know, when something's right for you, it just works.
Do you remember any of the thinkers or any books or anything you read on Bitcoin that really influenced you at the beginning there?
You know, the Bitcoin Standard, obviously.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from Andreas Antonopoulos.
Yeah, nice.
I learned a lot about the Lightning Network from him. I learned a lot about, you know, the whole ESG narrative and how actually Bitcoin can be environmentally friendly.
Hmm.
Other than that, I'm not like a huge reader. I'm more of like a YouTuber. I'll watch all the content, watch all the videos. And also I'm in a privileged position because I get to interview the experts.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Right.
So even when I was working in Malta and I didn't really know anything, I interviewed Roger Ver. So, you know, I'm speaking with him. I interviewed at the time he had a very good reputation. I interviewed Alex Mashinsky, you know, before he took everyone's money.
That was sad.
Yeah. So, you know, I interviewed a lot of different people. So I got to learn directly from the experts, which was also really helpful.
You did write a book, though, Undressing Bitcoin.
Undressing Bitcoin.
What was that all about? Who was that for?
It was for the person who is overwhelmed by how much information there is currently out there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you want to know about Bitcoin and you're going to have the patience to sit down and read the Bitcoin Standard, you need to already have some level of interest.
Yeah.
Because it requires patience.
Oh, okay, okay.
So I wanted to write a book for somebody who wants a quick, easy, digestible, concise answer as to what is Bitcoin, how do I use it, how does it work, you know? Mm-hmm. My friends, people who are interested, but they just don't have the patience to sit and read, or they're not even interested enough to dedicate the next few months to just reading a book about Bitcoin, you know?
Sure.
So it's supposed to be a really easy, concise guide for new people that want to get into Bitcoin.
And did you find that opened up any doors as far as the Leia Heilpern show went?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, when you say like, oh, you're an author, you're this,
that's
you're
impressive.
That. Right. Yeah. People definitely receive it quite well. So it definitely, it definitely opened up doors in that regard. But no, it was great. I loved doing it. It was very stressful. I wrote the whole book in a year and then rewrote it in a few weeks.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's one of those last minute, like, yeah, I hate everything. Take it out, rip it all apart. So yeah, that was fun.
The narrative around Bitcoin has been changing a lot. When we were talking earlier about how this cycle is a little bit different, I think the Bitcoin maxis are different. There's maybe a divide within that culture. Some of them are going into the inscriptions and the
ordinals BRC20 tokens.
What's your view on this? Because I understood that your audience was really kind of heavy in Bitcoin, but you're also branching out a little bit more as well.
Yeah.
What's that about?
So I'm very, like I said originally, I'm very political and I'm very pro-freedom. I'm a libertarian, you know, I'm quite anti-government. Well, more skeptical of government. I believe in small government. And naturally that does align a lot with Bitcoiners. That's the philosophy behind Bitcoin. However, it doesn't necessarily make me a Bitcoin maxi. And so, although I think Bitcoin is the best money we've ever seen, I'm somewhat a bit bored now. You know, I'm more interested in all the innovation happening on all the other chains.
Sure.
And yes, there's innovation happening on Bitcoin, but they seem to just be arguing amongst themselves. Nothing seems to really be getting done. I'm not that fascinated by ordinals, to be honest. You know, there is a lot of controversy around that. And I think the market should do what it wants. I believe in the free market. And I think if Bitcoiners want ordinals, then so be it. But it's funny because although I'm very pro-free market, I also understand where the Bitcoin maxis are coming from. Although I don't align with them, I understand where they're coming from because the beauty of Bitcoin is its predictability and its reliability. And by, you know, upgrading the network, changing the network, soft forks or whatever it is, it loses that predictability.
Yeah.
And that is the point of Bitcoin.
That was its strength.
Right.
Or is.
That was it. It still is its strength to an extent, but that was, you know, its unique selling point amongst all the other cryptos out there, the reliability and the predictability. So I do understand where Bitcoin maxis are coming from. However, this tribalism, and it's kind of pathetic at the end of the day, you know? So.
Well said.
I think it's quite pathetic.
Can you explain to us a little bit? You said soft fork in there. So there was a recent upgrade to Bitcoin, or what can you tell us about that?
So Taproot was the upgrade to Bitcoin. I think it happened maybe 18 months ago, maybe 2 years ago now. And actually, it's funny because all the Bitcoin maxis were extremely excited. It was supposed to help Bitcoin security, privacy, whatever it is, anonymity. Okay. But those very same maxis that were supporting Taproot are now angry about Taproot because Taproot allowed the infrastructure for ordinals to be built. And they don't like ordinals because ordinals is creating congestion on the network. People are just spamming the network with arguably crap, you know, like JPEGs, inscriptions that are just unnecessary. And that does affect the network. It makes it congested. And so the point of Bitcoin is to help those who are unbanked, you know, in these third world countries, keep the costs really low. But if you're just spamming the network with crap, then like you can't really help those in those third world countries who want to use Bitcoin as a secure payments network. So I understand where they're coming from. However, it's just kind of funny. It's like, well, you know, you promoted something and now it's having an adverse effect. It's kind of like you made your bed, you should lie in it.
Right, right. So are the dudes arguing? Are they, how do they feel about you covering other stuff besides? You were doing Ethereum a bit as well, but now you've really branched out. How do they feel about that?
Oh, they
do they have something to say about it?
They hate me for it, but you know, I don't mind. You know, you have to do what you want to do at the end of the day.
And,
you know, meme coins right now have been exploding and I'm so fascinated by meme coins. You know, people are raising, let's take Slur, for example. There's another project that I know called Poon. Poon, for example, raised $5 million dollars in 6.5 hours. Where else in what other industry are you going to raise $5 million in 6.5 hours? If Wall Street was to do that, it would take them years because of all the bureaucracy, red tape, compliance, you know, it would take them years. And so I'm so fascinated by that. And at the same time, you know, I think meme coins create community. They're fun.
That's exciting.
You can turn $500 into $500,000 overnight. It's good fun. And at the same time, it's titled meme coins. You're not tricking anyone. You know, you're not convincing anyone that like this is the next Bitcoin. It says meme coin. And so you know what you're getting into is what I'm saying. And so it's acceptable to promote something like that because it says what it is on the tin.
Totally.
And I think because it's so exciting, because people can raise so much money so quickly, because you can make so much money so quickly, I believe meme coins are the gateway drug to the rest of crypto.
That's right.
Because it brings people in. I know so many people that got into meme coins because of Doge, right? Back in the previous cycle. And now they're past meme coins and actually they own Bitcoin.
Sure.
They're experimenting with DeFi. You know, they're staking, they're making money, they're getting involved in airdrops, and they're actually very much now involved and integrated into the entire crypto ecosystem because of the meme coin. That was their gateway drug. You know, Elon Musk talking about meme coins on Saturday Night Live, it really brought a whole new audience in. And although I love Bitcoin and although I see Bitcoin as superior money, it's the safety net, it's the store of value, whatever it is, people don't care. People will always pick convenience, fun, entertainment over security, freedom, privacy. They don't care about that stuff until they need it. And right now, the West is a good 10, 15, even 20 years away from needing it in a way that other third world countries need Bitcoin.
That's right. So people in the West, how do you guide them if they want to get into meme coins? Do you have any advice to, you know, keep them from losing all their money at once?
Right.
Not financial advice, but any tips and guides for people?
Well, firstly, understand that a meme coin is what it says it is on the tin.
That's right.
It's a meme coin, so be prepared to lose.
Right.
You know, understand that there's not really any utility here other than potentially making a lot of money overnight.
Or you could be the joke.
If you don't make a lot of money overnight. You know, I would say if you have a lot of spare capital, you know, throw like $50 at like several different meme coins.
Yeah.
Hopefully one will moon. You come away with a few hundred.
Sure.
And we'll see. That's my advice, you know.
It's a great way to learn. And it also challenges networks as well when they have thousands of people suddenly coming in, causing congestion. You find all these UX problems that maybe we didn't see before.
Right.
It's kind of a good opportunity on all sides.
Yeah. Let's talk about Solana as an example.
Let's do it. Amazing.
So Solana had all these meme coins blowing up, right?
Yeah.
I tried to send to Solana, just to Sol, right?
Yeah.
It'd been stuck for 2 weeks because the network was so congested. And actually, I looked at my wallet today and I just said to Gideon, I was like, oh, look, my Solana's back in my wallet.
Okay.
You know, it was stuck.
Yeah.
That's not very good. So like you said, not only are meme coins a lot of fun for the user, but it's also a really good opportunity to test the network and see, is the network actually ready for mass adoption? Because ultimately, that's the goal here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's to create an alternative system that we can all trade peer-to-peer on and we can build a better future on. DeFi, dApps, whatever it is. And Solana's just not ready.
Is it back up? Wasn't like 30% of transactions going through or something?
Okay. I actually don't know, to be honest. Okay. It's been up, it's been down. 30% of transaction could still be off. But like I said, my two souls stuck for 2 weeks.
Wow, brutal.
Yeah.
What are you looking at? What do you like trading on right now? What platforms are you enjoying?
It's a good question. I'm interested in Base right now.
Yeah, Base is interesting. Yeah.
Base is interesting just because, you know, it's Coinbase's, it's backed by BlackRock. Mm-hmm. I don't really like the fact that it is so centralized. Obviously, I'm really pro decentralization.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I'm keen to see where the attention flows. I'm fascinated by that.
Of course.
And that is right now where all the attention is flowing.
Why do you think that is?
So Brett was a meme coin that did really well on Base. And a lot of people say that Brian Armstrong was behind that, pushing a lot of liquidity into that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's backed by BlackRock. So naturally, it's going to do well.
Because it's centralized and it's part of Coinbase, and Coinbase is highly regulated.
Right.
But all these unregulated activities are happening on it. So I don't really know what's going to happen there. Are the regulators going to come down hard on Base? Is this like a petri dish for regulators to see what we can get up to? I don't know.
No, it's a good point. And I was thinking about that the other day. I'm like, I'm here like trading meme coins and people are raising like millions on Base.
On
this
Base, yeah.
Centralized platform that's highly regulated. No, you're completely right. And it's fascinating. I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the future of Base is in that sense, you know? It could be a petri dish. I think that's a good way to look at it. I think it could be like a guinea pig, an opportunity for regulators to inspect and watch and see. You know, what's really weird about Base though, and this would be useful for everyone watching. So I use the Base Bridge.
Oh yeah, okay.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay.
You know, I just
Base Bridge from
to go from layer one ETH
yeah.
to Base layer two.
Okay, what's it like?
It's terrible. So getting from layer one
what's
ETH. No, it's really bad. Check this out. So get from layer one ETH to Base ETH. You can do that instantly, no problem.
Okay.
But to get back from Base ETH down to layer one ETH, it takes 7 days.
Oh my God.
It takes 7 days.
Okay.
But for me, it's taking 2 weeks.
Okay. Is Base culture good? Are guys having a good time?
Yeah. It's really good. I think it's just meme culture in general.
Yeah.
You know, we did a Spaces on Twitter. I keep calling it Twitter, it's X.
Yeah, whatever.
We did a Spaces on X the other day and, you know, we did a big one with the Base community, but we also did it with the Soul community. And it was just fun, you know, it wasn't like there was any rivalry and, you know, the Soul community respected the Base community. And ultimately, like, the technology is so new and it's constantly innovating. And we're all just trying to figure out what works best for us.
Yeah.
So, you know, if one person is launching a meme coin on Base and another one's doing it on Soul, let's have a conversation. How's your experience on Soul? How's your experience on Base? Like, let's learn and develop and grow together.
Yeah.
And that's really fun. And I'm really enjoying that. You know, there's no tribalism like you find with Bitcoin maximalism. We all know what we're getting into. We all know it's a laugh. We all know it's a joke. We all know we can lose money. And that's what I think is actually driving this innovation forward.
When times aren't so good, you know, we just came through the bear market here. How do you handle it on Twitter, on X? Mm. What do you do to there's a lot of angry people during the bear market, right? And they can be extremely nasty. How do you deal with that?
Well, you know, they can even be nasty in a bull market too.
Oh, sure.
Because if you're making money and they're not, then they're really mad.
Mm.
I don't read comments.
Okay.
I don't read comments.
Never.
Sometimes I'll just like quickly scroll through the first
few. Are you ever
few.
Looking for a fight and you go in?
No.
Okay.
I'm tired of it.
Like,
I don't read comments because people will purposely say things to trigger you.
Yes.
And they know what your triggers are.
Yeah.
If you're a man, they know where to hit you. If you're a woman, they know where to hit you. If you're old, if you're young, they know where to hit you.
Yeah.
And social media is this attention economy.
Mm-hmm.
And all people want to do is get the top like. So if I post something, they'll write any rubbish just to get more attention and to get that. Like, so I just don't read it, to be honest.
Okay, gotcha, yeah.
And you know, I just put out as much positivity as possible. I like to tell people what I'm doing, what I'm working on. You know, I think keeping people motivated as well during a bear market is really important. Going back to basics is important. Talking more about Bitcoin, talking more about Ethereum, talking more about the underlying infrastructure and where we're going is really important.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, you know, there's a lot more to talk about because everything's blowing up and people are building and things like that.
You know, one friendly rivalry that kind of rocketed you last cycle was your one with Peter Schiff there, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think you had fun with that.
Yeah, definitely.
That put you on, I don't know if that put you on TV, but that was a focus of some segments on TV a little
right.
bit there.
Yeah.
You were on TV a lot last cycle, weren't you?
Yeah, I was on media? Fox a lot.
Yeah, Fox,
I was on
yeah.
Fox Business, Fox News. I did ABC.
MSNBC?
I did MSNBC. Yeah, yeah. I did BBC. I did GB News, which is big in the UK. I did LBC, which is big in the UK. I might have done Sky News, which is big in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
I was kind of on all of them, to be honest.
Wild, yeah.
It's funny. I did ABC,
uh-huh.
ABC News. This is funny. I did ABC News and... they asked me, they showed me the questions before. Like they give you a generic overview of the questions.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, they're not here to trick you.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the questions they asked me was, why do you think black people are less likely to make money in crypto or something like that? It was like so random.
Oh my God.
And so so they sent me like, let's say like a list of like five questions. They were all, I was like, yeah, that's great. That's great. That's great. And then they just had this random, like, you know, racism question.
Yeah.
And so I just replied to them just saying, not really sure about that one. I'd rather you not ask me that. Like,
yeah.
I don't talk about race on my Twitter, so I don't know why they...
How do you even know that fact is true? It's just like a random fact.
Yeah,
now
so,
now
okay,
comment
right,
on it.
ABC yeah. says it's true, so it's true.
Right.
So I did tell them in advance, like I wouldn't be asking that question.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went on the news. They asked me the first question, nailed it. Second question, nailed it.
Yeah.
Then they come in with this racism question in relation
okay.
to crypto.
Yeah.
Even though I told them in advance that I wouldn't be answering that, but they still asked me it. And so I was kind of thrown off and I sort of said, oh, I'm not sure what that has to do with crypto. And I don't really know anything about that.
Yeah, good for you.
And then the presenter was just kind of paused. It was kind of awkward for a moment. And then we moved on. Anyway, I haven't been asked back on ABC since I didn't bite.
You didn't play their game.
I didn't
yeah,
play
there you
the
go, yeah.
racism game.
Yeah.
So I wasn't asked back on ABC
Shoot.
After that. Darn it. But it's okay. Fox have me back. So
cool.
But no, the interview that I did with Peter Schiff, that
yeah.
definitely blew up. And you know, I think the timing as well was really good for that because he was arguing that Bitcoin is useless.
Yeah.
Whereas gold is very useful.
Everything, right. Yeah,
gold
right.
is everything. And it was funny because that was at the time where the war with Ukraine really kicked off.
Oh yeah.
And people were fleeing Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And it just created this obvious use case for Bitcoin
right.
versus gold. Because you can't flee a war zone with your gold bullion bars,
yeah.
but you can flee a war zone with the keys in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the timing of that interview was fantastic because it really illustrated how Bitcoin is so much more superior to
yeah.
gold.
Beautiful. But you like being on TV?
Yeah.
yeah.
It's a bit stressful though.
Is it? What
yeah,
is?
Because you know, because sometimes they give you the questions and sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
With the Peter Schiff interview, they told me nothing.
Okay.
And actually I was at my mom and dad's house in England and I was just eating dinner at 7 p.m. and I was like, oh, I'm on in like 30 minutes. They're like, what are you talking about? I was like, I don't know. Bitcoin
oh my God,
versus
yeah.
gold.
Yeah.
So it's quite stressful. And you know, you especially American TV, because American TV is very passionate.
Yeah.
You got to be sharp. You got to be quick.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be very forthcoming very quickly.
Yeah.
That's how Americans are. So you want to just get the words off your tongue as fast as possible. You want to have the vocabulary at the tip of your tongue.
Wow, yeah.
So American TV is a lot more, less maybe competitive is the word than British TV.
What's a story that you think American TV or mainstream media is after when they have you on? What are they looking to understand about crypto?
I think when they have me on personally, they want to portray a narrative that crypto isn't just for the nerd white boy.
Yeah.
Basically, they want to be like, look, there's young, charismatic, feminine women
yeah.
in crypto. I think they want to show a more inclusive narrative. You know, when they have me on, I think they want to show that it's exciting for young people. That's what a lot of these channels are doing right now. You know, they'll have a lot of young women speaking passionately about this technology
yeah.
To help, I guess, promote the technology in a way and show it in a different light.
Yeah.
Show that it's exciting, it's appealing, it's trendy, it's cool, and it can be relatable.
They do seem very positive about it. In fact, some of the politicians who, you know, are trying to rile up their base being anti-crypto, they kind of get a bad story.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because that's very true. I think I think that's something citizens have to actually be very careful of when they're voting.
Yeah.
I think politicians are going to use Bitcoin as an election issue. And yeah. they're going to be very pro-Bitcoin just to win votes. And that's actually what Eric Adams did, the mayor of New York.
Yes, I remember I was excited about him because of this.
So Eric Adams, the mayor of New York, was extremely pro-Bitcoin before he got in and actually used that to get more votes. He comes in, he bans Bitcoin mining in New York.
Yeah.
And so that's something people have to be very wary of. You know, let's take RFK as an example. I actually bumped into RFK in the gym other day, which was crazy. I told him, went up to him, I was like, love everything you're doing about Bitcoin, love what you're saying about vaccines and all this stuff. Anyway, RFK definitely riled up a base around Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I believe his narrative, you know, I think he's true to it, but it is something that I would tell voters to be wary of. People will say they're very pro-Bitcoin. They'll come in and actually implement anti-Bitcoin policies.
Sure. Or another one I hear is they'll be, I'm against CBDCs.
Right.
But the machinery is already rolling. You know, these are already coming. So I don't really believe it when I hear that either.
Yeah, yeah. What's his name? It's just lost me. Ted Cruz?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so he's been very pro-Bitcoin, anti-CBDCs. But the reality is, what can you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you know anything about how the world works, the legislation that's implemented goes way beyond the senators, the congressmen.
Exactly.
Even the president.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a greater agenda. And if they want a CBDC, they will have a CBDC.
Absolutely.
In fact, we're already seeing it being rolled out. I think over 90% of world banks are all working on CBDCs. You know, we have FedNow in the US, which is basically a CBDC. You know, I also think a CBDC won't necessarily be implemented in the way that we think, which is, okay, guys, today we are now using the digital dollar. We're all going to convert our money. No, it's not going to be as on the nose and as direct as that.
Okay.
No form of communism or authoritarianism or control is ever as on the nose as that.
Uh-huh.
It will swoop in.
Ooh.
And I think it will swoop in the form of USDC.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it seems like it.
Because Ethereum is extremely centralized.
Yeah.
BlackRock are getting in.
Yeah.
And the network can be programmed. These coins can be programmed. We've already seen how, I think it was the DOJ was able to freeze several USDT and USDC addresses with hundreds of thousands of dollars inside.
Yeah.
So the network is subject to being programmed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're already using stablecoins. So why roll out something else? Why not just use something which people are already using and actually people are enjoying using?
Yeah.
So that to
me, I think you're right about that.
Is how the CBDC comes.
Do you think there is any hope in the technology that we report on? Do you think?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, really. That's not just a fluffy story to sell a meme?
No, I think, you know, if you see how much money people are making, like that's very real.
Okay.
You know, the average person in a third world country can actually make hundreds of thousands. Like that's very real.
Yeah.
And it's not just meme coins. It's also the way blockchain technology opens up the global economy.
Yeah.
You know, like I work with people in Pakistan. I work with people in all parts of the world, pay them very good money.
Yeah, right.
And that's an opportunity that they didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of crypto, and I can pay them in crypto. You know, good luck paying them, especially with the American banking system, which is so old fashioned and outdated.
Right. Of course.
PayPal's a nightmare as well. PayPal blocks your funds. You know, I have my funds held on PayPal for a while. So it's very difficult. So crypto really is an incredible way to make a lot of money, put people on the financial map, open up global opportunity. So that's very real. And as well as that, you have to understand how hard governments are coming down on Bitcoin. Even how hard governments came down on El Salvador. That's an indication of, they do see this as a legitimate threat. You know, El Salvador is doing absolutely incredible. They made Bitcoin legal tender. They have an average buying price of Bitcoin at around, I think, late $30,000, I think, maybe $40,000.
Wow.
The IMF, World Banks, America, they threatened El Salvador. They were threatening them with sanctions, restrictions, and all sorts of things. They ignored it. And now they're much better off for it.
Yeah.
You know, the country's in the green.
I think a lot of people in the West don't realize how important this technology is to other nations. I was in Argentina a year and a half ago, and this is before the change of government. But while I was there for 12 days, the currency against the US dollar doubled while I was there in 12 days. And what they had on the street, they had a different rate for the peso than they did in the banks, right? Mm. And how would you get that peso? You'd give USDT to somebody and a person on a motorbike would show up with a big stack of pesos, you know, cheaper than you could get at the bank. But this is how their economy is running.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And when an economy collapses, we have this technology there for people.
That's fascinating.
It was interesting. You said US is 10, 15 years away from really needing this. That's a bold statement, but maybe it's not too far off.
Yeah, I mean, so let me elaborate on that a little more, because some people could say, no, we need it now. Inflation is crazy. And that is true. Look, in terms of a safe haven, we need that now.
Yeah.
Right? Inflation is astronomical. They're still printing money. They're doing it very quietly. We do need Bitcoin as a hedge against inflation. I stand by that 100%. Year on year, Bitcoin makes higher lows. Right?
Yeah.
As you look at the chart, you zoom out, it's up and to the right. It's a great beautiful hedge against inflation.
Yeah.
But in terms of like the dollar collapsing and, you know, the $50 in your hand turning to toilet paper, right? Yeah. Like you see in Venezuela. Mm. We're 50 years away from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in terms of the actual infrastructure of the banking system here, it's dreadful. It's so fascinating to me. I actually can't believe it. In the UK, if I want to send you money,
yeah,
I need your account number, sort code, send it, faster payments. It takes seconds.
Brilliant.
In the US,
yeah,
you have to do a wire and it's difficult.
Okay.
It's so difficult. I pay people with Zelle. That's great, Zelle, but not everybody has Zelle. Not everybody has
this
Venmo.
Is a payment app?
Yeah, it's like a third party app. Okay. Hmm. Not everyone has Cash App. Not everybody has Venmo.
Yeah.
Like, why can't I just do a bank to bank transfer like that?
Hey, while we're bragging in Canada, all I need is your phone number.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, it's nice. Or email. Yeah.
But is that using a third party or is that actually bank to bank?
It's using our Interac debit service, our nationwide debit service.
Ah, yeah. I see. Okay, yeah. So I think it's similar in the UK.
Yeah, nice.
But it's crazy. How is America?
I don't know.
So behind.
That's, so far ahead, but so behind. Right.
Yeah. You know, America leads in everything.
I know.
In technology, everything we use, Facebook,
exactly.
Twitter,
yeah.
Instagram, it was all built here in the US,
exactly.
Came out of California.
Mm-hmm.
And yet their banking system is behind. It makes me think they do it on purpose.
Oh, maybe they do. Nice point.
Destruction by design.
Well done. Look, I want to ask you, you said, you know, you want to start a family, build a family in Florida. This is a dream of yours. It's a wonderful dream. What do you think your role in the crypto space is over the next few years?
Continuing the same, you know? I think the beauty of crypto is it's decentralized, so you can do it from anywhere in the world. You know, there's no one time zone. It's a global time zone, so you could do it any time of night, any time of day. And, you know, I'm not really here to make money.
Yeah.
You know, I think once you've been here like a few cycles, you're good. I'm not really here to make money.
Mm.
I'm here because I'm fascinated. I'm enjoying it. I like the technology. And so for me, I'm just having fun. You know, it's like it becomes a hobby. So why would you stop your hobby in spite of other things going on in your life?
Right,
you know?
Brilliant.
So no, I love it. And it's great. I'm like a nerd at heart, so I'm not going anywhere, you know?
That's good. Bitcoin price prediction for the top of this market?
$240,000.
You are a good sport for answering that. Thanks a lot. We really, really appreciated having you on the Space Monkeys podcast. You're a guest unlike who we usually have, so exciting to have you here. And thanks for sharing all your wisdom and your perspective and for doing a great job educating people and bringing more people into the space.
Me, it's been a pleasure. Love the back and forth. Great questions. And I'm excited for the bull run and we'll see how everything goes.